There is an entire genre of YouTube videos devoted to an experience which I am certain that everyone in this room has had. It entails an individual who, thinking they're alone, engages in some expressive behavior, wild singing, gyrating dancing, some mild sexual activity, only to discover that, in fact, they are not alone, that there is a person watching and lurking, the discovery of which causes them to immediately cease what they're doing in horror. The sense of shame and humiliation in their face is palpable. It's the sense of, this is something I'm willing to do only if no one else is watching. This is the crux of the work on which I have been singularly focused for the last 16 months, the question of why privacy matters, a question that has arisen in the context of a global debate enabled by the revelations of Edward Snowden that the United States and its partners, unbeknownst to the entire world, has converted the internet, once heralded as an unprecedented tool of liberation and democratization, into an unprecedented zone of mass indiscriminate surveillance. There is a very common sentiment that arises in this debate, even among people who are uncomfortable with mass surveillance, which says that there's no real harm that comes from this large-scale invasion because only people who are engaged in bad acts have a reason to want to hide and to care about their privacy. This worldview is implicitly grounded in the proposition that there are two kinds of people in the world, good people and bad people. Bad people are those who plot terrorist attacks or who engage in violent criminality and therefore have reasons to want to hide what they're doing, have reasons to care about their privacy. But by contrast, good people are people who go to work, come home, raise their children, watch television. They use the internet not to plot bombing attacks, but to read the news or exchange recipes or to plan their kids' Little League games. And those people are doing nothing wrong and therefore have nothing to hide and no reason to fear the government monitoring them. The people who are actually saying that are engaged in a very extreme act of self-deprecation. What they're really saying is, I have agreed to make myself such a harmless and unthreatening and uninteresting person that I actually don't fear having the government know what it is that I'm doing. This mindset has found what I think is its purest expression in a 2009 interview with the longtime CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt, who, when asked about all the different ways his company is causing invasions of privacy for hundreds of millions of people around the world, said this. He said, if you're doing something that you don't want other people to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Now, there's all kinds of things to say about that mentality. The first of which is that the people who say that privacy isn't really important, they don't actually believe it. And the way you know that they don't actually believe it is that while they say with their words that privacy doesn't matter, with their actions, they take all kinds of steps to safeguard their privacy. They put passwords on their email and their social media accounts. They put locks on their bedroom and bathroom doors, all steps designed to prevent other people from entering what they consider their private realm and knowing what it is that they don't want other people to know. The very same Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, ordered his employees at Google to cease speaking with the online internet magazine CNET, after CNET published an article full of personal private information about Eric Schmidt, which it obtained exclusively through Google searches and using other Google products. This same division can be seen with the CEO of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, who in an infamous interview in 2010 pronounced that privacy is no longer a, quote, social norm. Last year, Mark Zuckerberg and his new wife purchased not only their own house, but also all four adjacent houses in Palo Alto for a total of $30 million in order to ensure that they enjoyed a zone of privacy that prevented other people from monitoring what they do in their personal lives.
gonna start going way up. I heard they checking for me, no one checking on me, so I had to go run up a check. I got the message, homie, ain't no flexing on me. Hey, hey, hey. How is everyone doing out there? I hope you're doing well. This is Simon for the Closed Network podcast, privacy podcast. Today is Saturday, November 20th, 2021. This is episode 5. Title of this podcast is Privacy and Compartmentalization. The reason I decided to go this route is if you've listened to the first 4 episodes, this is kind of a little bit more of a why. Those are how to do things, and this is more of a why. Before I get into the meat of this, I want to say thank you to everyone who has started listening from the No Agenda show. I am a huge fan, longtime listener of No Agenda podcast. It's not exactly a privacy podcast, but it definitely is a podcast that I listen to every week, twice a week. Each episode is a couple hours, usually 2.5 hours long. But it's a great podcast. Actually, it's my favorite podcast. It's the greatest podcast in the universe. That's actually what it is. That's what it's called. Hosted by Adam Curry and JC Dvorak. I've been listening about 10 years, roughly. And I have been contributing as a just started as the podcast to their show, and some people have been listening, and I really appreciate the emails and the support. I've also launched a Twitter account, which is twitter.com/closednetwork, NTWRK. So no E, no O on that, as well as the reviews on the website and through the podcast review. I know each podcast platform has its own review mechanism. I've tried to simplify it by going, if you just go to the website, closednetwork.com. You can also go to closednetworkpodcast.com. It'll redirect over to there. But you can leave reviews. You can also leave reviews inside of wherever you're listening to, if it's Apple Podcasts or any other platform. I've received a couple of those, and that's really appreciative. I am thankful for that, as well as getting some donations through those using Podcast 2.0 apps through the use of Lightning. Basically, you can contribute Bitcoin sats through podcasts, and I do that too. I contribute to others. And if you are interested in what I'm talking about a little bit deeper, you want some background, I'll post a link to the podcastindex.org apps directory, where you can download a podcast 2.0 compliant or compatible application that you can listen to. You can also, there's some that you can listen to on the web. It basically enhances the experience. It gives you more features. This podcast is in the 2.0 directory, so you can find us there. So I appreciate that. All donations are, of course, welcome. The reason why I mentioned the No Agenda podcast and why it's even a big deal is I've adopted that mentality, that model of the value for value model. So the show is and will always be donation funded. We are selling... I love saying we. It's just me, but I do get help from others sometimes. So I try to be a team player. But we are going to be selling, and need to get the store. I'm still working up on the store. Going to be selling those de-Google Android devices. It can be pre-installed with Calyx OS or Graphene OS. I'll talk a little bit more about Calyx OS a little bit later in the podcast. So. Appreciate all the support, appreciate the donations and the feedback. Really did not expect that this quick. This is a very new podcast. I did the first episode back in June, just trying to get stuff set up, and finally got my butt in gear and started really focusing on doing the show, planning the show, doing the notes, and what I'm going to talk about. So I had a little gap there, but in the last few episodes, it's really caught up. A lot of interest, and I am thankful. I really appreciate it. My whole goal is to be another voice on the internet out there where people can access it without having to go through any kind of particular platform and get some good information. I'm not an expert, but I've just really spent a lot of time and research over the last couple of years within the privacy slash security topic. They're not mutually exclusive, but focusing on privacy and increasing security is kind of just part of that journey. So this episode, privacy and compartmentalization, is to talk about why you would want to use some of these tools and techniques. The tools would be generally apps or a device, whether it's a hardware wallet, two-factor authentication, a phone, you know, those, or an application. And then, you know, really kind of trying to, convey my philosophy, if you will, of why using these apps and different techniques. And if you're listening to this, you definitely have an interest. I don't know where you are in your journey. I call it a journey because you're always learning and you're trying new things and experimenting with new tools or applications. And then you're kind of finding your way. So the path isn't the same for every single person. So when I say a journey, I really do mean that, in that it's something that you're going to discover what works well for you, and it may be completely different than what I'm doing or what somebody else is doing. So within the compartmentalization realm, specifically, my focus is on the separation of your personal identity from other identities you have online. So we're talking about pseudonyms, or what are often referred to as NIMS, N-Y-M-S, just short for pseudonym. So if I say NIM, I mean pseudonym. And the importance of creating these different online NIMs to protect your personal identity and reduce your attack vectors. So what I mean by that is, if you're registering for some community site or a forum or something like that, just expect that at some point it will be breached or hacked, or there will be some kind of a sell or a relinquish of data, whether it's through a purchase of that platform or something down the road. And if you have all of your real name information, your real name, your real address, email address, or possibly your address, if you've purchased something from that website before, that, you know, that those are the attack vectors I'm talking about, then it's simplifying the process of determining who that account belongs to online and being able to link it to other potential data breaches that have happened in the past. And if you're using different kind of like these pseudonyms online, it reduces the potential for your real identity to be exposed through those data leaks and those breaches or data scrapes, whatever the case may be. So what does that mean? So like, if you are one of those people that loves to be on social media, first I would consider reducing that overall engagement. And what I mean by that is, not because I'm just going to sit here and say social media is bad, delete all your social media. It is psychologically, emotionally damaging to a lot of people. And it can, and I don't mean just in the sense of like feeling depressed or making you feel bad and that kind of thing, but it really robs your productivity and your time from doing things and spending time with people in a matter that actually has a real physical impact on your person. And that's kind of one area, is to look at and evaluate, okay, what platforms am I on? Could I go without it for a week? And do I feel better mentally? It's easy to get caught up in scrolling, swiping up and up and up, right? In this infinite scroll. And I am definitely guilty of falling into those traps quite often. So I have to kind of check myself when I'm engaging in social media content. But on the flip side, it can also be quite useful. It can be a great resource of information. So if you are registering a Twitter account or Facebook or something, Instagram or whatever it may be, then definitely consider, rather than signing up with that, you know, your name, because they will ask for your name, your birthday, your cell phone number, everything, email address, is to feed it with as much junk as possible. And you can keep track of what junk you're feeding to which platforms if you're using a password manager. I recommend KeePass XC or Bitwarden, but really just use one. It doesn't really matter so much as far as, you know, which application you decide to go with, but just that you put into practice using a password manager and using that to also keep track of all of your identities. And you can actually, most password managers even have an identity category, notes, usernames, passwords, credit cards, even if you want to. So you can really keep all of your pertinent information in this encrypted vault and help. It can help you manage, you know, because it can be confusing and not confusing, but it can be daunting to try to remember, oh, which profile am I using for this? What profile am I using for that? So here are my recommendations for this compartmentalization and using a pseudonym is if you're registering for a social media platform, is to have an email address, and I suggest Tutanota or ProtonMail. Let me make a note to put those in the show notes. So I recommend these two, especially for these types of use cases where you want to create an email account for a specific use, because you can create, first of all, you're not using Gmail. That's the biggest thing. Get off Gmail, get off Outlook, get off anything that's free. Tutanota and ProtonMail both offer free email accounts for like a basic, you know, functionality, but you can pay for a premium account. And if you're paying for a service, then your money is what is the product to them, right? If you're paying for it, as opposed to your data, paying for it with money. So get used to the idea of just paying for stuff. Pay for a VPN. I'll talk about VPNs later, but pay for your VPN. Don't use free ones. Pay for your email service. Number two, it helps support these platforms that are building tools and resources that are supporting privacy. ProtonMail, for instance, I know for sure has, you know, it's all encrypted. So even if they were to get, you know, some sort of order to access their information, they don't hold the keys. It's a zero trust platform. It also, if you email other ProtonMail users inside their platform, it's all end-to-end encrypted. So if you have a friend or family member and you're emailing each other back and forth on ProtonMail to another ProtonMail account, it stays end-to-end encrypted. Once it goes to the web, if you're not using PGP, it's not encrypted. Always assume all of your messages are being intercepted and read just as a default. But it's good to put into practice using alternate email. You can also use your own domain name, which is something I do suggest. So if you're in this journey and you're thinking about maybe I'll just start a whole new email account for myself, yes, I suggest doing that, especially if you're on Gmail and you're looking to port over. That's the path I took. Don't delete your Gmail accounts, though. Don't ever delete them. Just stop using them and forward those emails, you know, whatever, to your new one. It will take time, but there's always going to be an account you forgot about. You need to reset a password, and it probably was still set to your Gmail, so don't delete your Gmail accounts. But, you know, if you want to set up your own domain, you can purchase a domain name. Usually they're about, you know, $8 to $10, $12, depending upon where you buy them from. And you can actually use that domain name for your email addresses and have it hosted on ProtonMail. I think Tutanota also provides the same service. I need to look into that, but ProtonMail does for sure. I'm actually looking at moving some other domain emails over to them and away from Google Apps. You know, why not, right? And I got to pay for Google Apps. If you're not familiar, that's the Google, what they now call Google Workspaces. So if you have like a company and a company domain name registered, you can have Google hosted as if it was like Gmail, and you usually pay like $6 an account. Might as well give that to a company that's supporting privacy and an advocate for it. That's just my feeling, and I'll get into that a little bit more a little later. So you can set up an email account. You can also just use their email servers. And let's say you have one email account on Tutanota, you have a paid account, and you're going to use that for all your social media accounts. What you can do is you don't have to have like a ton of different email, air quote, accounts. You can have a couple, maybe two or three. But then within those email accounts, you can create aliases. So for instance, let's just use Bob Smith. Okay. So you're going to register Bob Smith at protonmail.com. That's your email account. And under Bob Smith, you can create an alias. That's maybe something like, you wouldn't want to use your real name obviously, but I'm just using this as an example. Maybe Bob creates an alias called my super secret Twitter account email at Proton, or you know, at protonmail.com. Cool. So you can use that one, or just create a more general social media alias, like this is my crappy, you know, social media email, burnt turn and burn baby, you know, at protonmail.com. And you can use that email address to register on Twitter or wherever else you want. And what the cool thing is that if there's ever a breach or a dump or a hack of some kind, breach and hack, kind of the same thing, not always, it can be internal. But if there's ever an exposure of that data, it's going to have that email address. So even though it goes to the same email account, Bob Smith is still protected as far as that particular identity, that email account. They're going to have an alias that gets dumped out. And if that alias is only ever really used with just social media profiles, yeah, there's attack vectors there for like they could try to use that alias and you could get really funky and try to and just use a different email account for every single login. You can also use simple login for this service. You don't have to just use aliases. There's a couple of different tools. Like there's more than one way to solve these kind of problems. And those are that's my choice. You know, generally what I'm doing is I'm usually using a simple login email, or I'm using an alias that's off of Tutanota or ProtonMail. So that kind of, and then you put that in your password manager. You let your password manager create a crazy 21 character or longer password, use symbols, upper, lowercase, and numbers. And that one that password and the email that you're using are only good on that one website and will only ever be good on that website. So what you're also doing is you're creating a pseudonym email account. I would suggest if you register a social media account, use a pseudonym there. There's no reason to use your real name on Twitter unless you're a super high profile person and for whatever reason, but that's probably not the use case here. And so you're using a pseudonym on the social platform and you're also kind of using this email alias that's not really tied back to you. And the reason why this is important is because all of these websites talk to each other and share data, especially social media sites. They allow each other to see each other's cookies, to track you across the web. Facebook has what's called Facebook Pixel. A lot of people install the snippet of code on their website. And what it does is if you are logged into your Facebook and you come across this website, it tags this pixel. And so that's how they're tracking you around the web and within the Facebook platform or Instagram and other properties that they own. So this is how that tracking kind of starts to begin. And I also suggest I'll have a whole episode probably dedicated to like staying privacy using, you know, while you're surfing the web and which extensions to use within, you know, your browser. And it can be Firefox or Brave or whatever number of different browsers out there. I won't get into the weeds on that right now, but there are ways to try to reduce that tracking using the web as well. And I suggest using the web as much as possible, whether it's on your desktop or your mobile device, as opposed to downloading an app that has a lot of stuff in there that's going to be tracking you. Even on the mobile device, you can create a shortcut to your desktop in your web browser to access those social media sites. So you can still go on there, consume content, but you don't have all the crap running on your phone. It's not trying to access your contacts, your microphone, your webcam, your camera phone on your phone. I've had a couple drinks tonight. It's late. It's Saturday. It's almost midnight. So I'm not slurring. I'm just, my brain is not firing correctly. So anyway, rather than having all those apps installed that are accessing everything on your device and all your contacts, trying to upload your contact, just use the Progressive Web app. They work really well. They don't work quite as great, but they work pretty dang close. I use on my Calyx OS Pixel 5, I use Twitter on there, and I use the shortcut to the Progressive Web app. And when I say Progressive Web app, that's just the website loading on your mobile phone in the mobile browser. It will optimize the experience for a mobile device versus a desktop. So it kind of acts like it's an actual app with all the buttons in the right places where you're expecting to see them. And it actually, it works really well. I have had no issues with it. I use the Progressive web app for quite a few things, even simple login. Twitter, I also have a couple of Mastodon accounts that I log on to, which is a kind of an open source version of Twitter, for those that aren't familiar with Mastodon. I plan to maybe, depending upon how this show goes, setting up a Mastodon server and federating with a couple other servers, because it really is uncensored. So not to go too down that path too far, we want to talk about compartmentalization. So you are setting up kind of these different pseudo identities for yourself on the web. Another thing I would suggest to do is have like one alias dedicated for just finance. So when I say finance, just your bank and credit card logins, your 401k, whatever investment accounts you have, is to kind of isolate those and only use that one alias just for like air quote finance category type websites or services, because kind of a couple things can happen. One is you're reducing where your finance companies are, like what email address you're using, and you don't want to use the same one across the web and all these other services. And the second thing is, if you start getting spam, you kind of know where it's coming from. And so I don't know if I wouldn't use a simple login for that. I would just use a paid account, set up an alias. You could even set up an alias per financial institution. So one for your mortgage company, one for your bank, whatever. And it just kind of separates your online identity and your email address from all the other stuff you're doing online. From there, you may also consider using something like MySudo to set up isolated containers, which also have a mobile phone number. Now, I will say that I have not been successful in using a MySudo voice over IP number to register a Twitter account. In that case, I mean, this is kind of getting a little crazy, but I have several Mint Mobile, which is in the United States. They're an MVNO for T-Mobile. SIM cards that I paid for in cash at a Best Buy. And I will activate those sometimes, occasionally I'll activate one. They're incredibly cheap plans, and I'll activate one so I have a real SIM phone number that I can use to register for certain things online. I typically don't have those phones on. I don't have them on connected to Wi-Fi or anything like that, but it's maybe a little extreme in this kind of scenario. Like if you're just starting out, you're thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm going to buy SIM cards and do it. Well, eventually you might, because the further you go down this rabbit hole, the more you start to understand like how everything is so tied to a mobile phone number, a device ID, an IP address, a MAC address, an email account, so on and so forth. So they use, think of these, if you're familiar with databases, they use all these different unique information points, like data records about you to create a primary key. And the more things they can link to that primary key, the more confident they can be in who you actually are, your demographic, your geography, income level, education level, all these different things. And this is exactly what big data companies are, how they make money, is they're building all of the connections to that primary key, you as an individual. So the more monkey wrenches you can throw into that, the more you reduce the possible, the more you reduce the potential that you'll be targeted through one of these hacks or exposures of data, because there's less information linking to your real person, your real identity. So creating different email accounts, creating aliases, or using something like Simple Login. And when you register those accounts, don't use your real name. And you can put what your name is, what the birth date you made up, and all that kind of stuff. Keep that in the login record in your password manager. That will help you remember, because there might be something where it'll say, like, put in an answer to a question that only you would know. Make it up. Never make all that stuff up. Make it totally unrelated to you. And there, you know, it just continues to A, feed bad data, but B, you can always get back into your account. You can always recover if and when you need to. So phone number sources, MySudo, Google Voice, I mean, you know, ironically enough, could also be used for things like that. I don't know. I haven't used Google Voice in a very long time, but I do know some people have had success registering a social media sites using Google Voice numbers. I personally have not tried it because I don't use Google Voice. Also, there's another great privacy and security OSINT podcast. OSINT is open source investigation tools and techniques. Investigation, OSINT, yeah, something like that. Great podcast. Mike Bazell, who runs that, IntelTechniques.com. I'll link to, I forget the episode, I think it's 238. It was back in October. I will link to that episode for those that want to see another option of using Twilio. Twilio is a voice over IP service where you can lease phone numbers, roughly a dollar or two a month per phone number. And he walks through this process of using a SIP app on your Android device, which is basically a voice over IP, you know, app, and even running your own SMS like relay on a Node.js server. I know I might be getting a little geeky here for a minute, but it's a really cool episode. I'll link to the episode 238 where he and the guy that helped him develop the tool for running your own phone number and SMS messaging dashboard where you could get to your text messages and it forwards into the phone and it keeps them on the Node.js server, and it doesn't, allegedly, I don't know how it all works on the technical back end, but it, like, once the carrier sends it, it's pretty much gone after a certain point in time. SMS messages, not the case if you're like iPhone, iMessage, anything like that. But anyways, it's pretty cool. I have not set it up. I am pretty happy just using my sudo to manage all that stuff, but it's pretty cool. If you want to take a look at that, listen to that podcast, and it's a great podcast. I'll link that in the show notes. As far as the email services, I mentioned Simple Login, ProtonMail, Tutanota. MySudo can also handle email and phone numbers with your identity, so that it could be an all-encompassing app. That app you have to sign up for with a traditional iPhone or Google phone that uses Google Play because it has a subscription model. Eventually, they're working on having the ability for people to pay for that subscription outside of those ecosystems. But the cool thing is they do have the APK file, so you can download and install it on your de-Googled Android device, and you know, it will synchronize. So that's pretty cool. And I'm a big fan. If you are at a place where you're like, I really use my iPhone a lot, I use it for work, I've got global calendars and all these different things, is to, you know, rather than just try to make that jump, is to, you know, have this second device and find ways and replacements for migrating to a de-Googled phone. Because it's not hard, but it takes a little time to figure things out. I will be doing some in-depth episodes on configuring those de-Googled Android devices, because it has taken me the better part of a year and a half to kind of really try to figure out what works well for me. Now, not all of it may work well for you, but we all learn by listening and seeing what other people are doing and then trying stuff and then kind of figuring things out on our own. But having that starting place, I think, is really important. So I think there'd be probably a whole episode just on setting, and it'd probably be one episode per operating system. I've used both Graphene OS and Calyx OS. Graphene OS is definitely more hardened. It's for the privacy hardcore person that's like, I just need a phone, I want to be able to get on the web, I install a few apps, but you're not going to be installing like a ton of stuff. And installing a ton of stuff, I go back to what I said earlier in this episode about questioning whether or not you really need it, how important, how much value is it providing to you to have these social media apps installed on your phone. A lot of banking sites even work really well just like an app would, just by logging into it on your mobile device through the web browser. You'd be amazed how many of these different apps could be just replaced by just logging into them on the web. I know the app is more convenient. It saves your credentials. It has the ability to take a photo of something if you need to, like, upload a check through a banking app and all these different things. But there's also the ability to, you can install the app and use it if you don't need to use it all the time, and then just install it again later when you need it. I've been using Calyx OS now for around 4 months. Before that was on Graphene OS, and I really do like it. I know I mentioned Graphene OS, more hardened, more privacy focused. Calyx OS is it's a lot more user friendly. It installs something called MicroG, which is an anonymized version of Google Play services. So what it does is it works much better with apps that send notifications to your phone. A lot of the apps that you would install on Graphene OS, even free and open source ones, won't give you notifications unless they're specifically built to do that without needing a MicroG service running in the background. So I won't get too much into those because I am planning to do an episode just on Calyx OS. That actually may be the next episode. I'm not totally sure, but it's going to be very soon because it's I think it's one of the most important things that one of the most sought out things that people are looking for. And it's important because it's your mobile phone. It's probably one of your most or the most personal computing device you have that you use on a daily basis. So the second part of this that I want to talk about is looking for free and open source replacements for apps and services. And it doesn't necessarily have to be free and open source, but if it's open source, they're generally much more secure, and that's something that I like to support. As it pertains to compartmentalization, you can have two different devices for two different kind of, or for your different pseudonyms, if you will. So if you have like a real phone number that everyone has, and you're, you know, whether it's a traditional Android or iPhone, keep using that and then kind of create a separate identity, because it may even be prudent to look at changing your phone number. Or when I say changing it, keep your original one, but then give all your friends and family members like this new number and be selective who you give it out to. Or maybe you get a new SIM card, a new phone number, a de-Googled phone, and then you set up something like MySudo or a Twilio number, and you give that number to everyone. You don't even give them the number to this new SIM card that you're activating. And that can kind of allow you to also compartmentalize out from there who gets which pseudo number, for instance, or Twilio number, or whatever, you know, this virtual number that you're using. I know that might be a little extreme, but in the sense of mobile device compartmentalization, it's much harder to do because you're doing everything off of one device. So sometimes two devices might make sense for that situation. Heck, maybe even three. Maybe your primary one never leaves the house, or when you do leave the house, it goes into a Faraday bag. For those that are not familiar with a Faraday bag, it's a bag that basically is lined and blocks the phone from transmitting any kind of Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, or cellular signal out. I've purchased my Faraday bags from a website called GoDark, godarkbags.com. I'll have a link to that. I'm not in any way affiliated with them. I just have purchased them. They work great. I have one for an iPad, a couple for mobile devices, and also, when I purchased my GoDark bags, I'm actually on their website right now. Yep. They accept, you of course pay with, you know, Visa, MasterCard, or whatever, but they also accept cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Monero, and Zcash. I actually purchased mine with Monero. So Monero is a very privacy-focused cryptocurrency that anonymizes you from your identity when you make online purchases on the web. Cryptocurrency will be a big part of this podcast. I haven't really gotten into it yet because it is such a huge subject, big topic, that I kind of want to ease into that. But using cryptocurrency is definitely a good way to improve your privacy. And it creates this sovereignty for yourself with your transactions online. And that's all I'm going to say about that right now, because that is such a big topic and I don't want to get too far down that rabbit hole. But godarkbags.com, I've purchased. They're great. They're very slick too. They look very professional. If you pulled it out of a laptop bag or something, it doesn't look like anything weird. It might look weird to people when you pull your devices out of it, but they literally just look like very cool protective bags for your electronics. They just also happen to be Faraday bags. That may be something to look at. And as you're figuring out like how to compartmentalize your online identities, another device may or may not make sense at all. I'm not really telling you what to do. This is just what I do. So I do have an iPhone that I use for work. I have a separate SIM for that. And then my personal phone is a Google Pixel 5 running Calyx OS. I also run my sudo on it. They're synchronized back for both phones. So the nice thing is if I'm on one and someone sends an email or text message or a call to a sudo number, I'm going to get it on both phones. Kind of nice. So I think this is probably the easiest way to start out is, again, I try to find ways so you don't, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's going on and on talking about all these different things. Like, okay, what do I start? Start with setting up an email account with Tutanota or ProtonMail. Use the free one. Try it out. If you like it, upgrade. I highly suggest upgrading because that's what's going to give you the more aliases. ProtonMail has actually been working on a lot of application ecosystem apps for their service. I'm not promoting to do that, but they're basically trying to, you know, come up with ways to replace a lot of the services that you would normally see with Google. So like a Drive account, calendar, contacts, that kind of stuff. I like to manage my contacts personally and my files personally, myself on a Nextcloud server, but that may be a good starting point for a lot of people who are not technical or who are not ready to put that kind of time and effort in, because it's just an easy move over. And I would definitely promote using Proton Drive over Google Drive. I would also consider using a contact database there as well. But just set up an email account. It's free. Try it out. Get familiar with it. If you are like, okay, I'm going to make this switch, you know, start updating your accounts with your new email account and aliases with your online services. It takes a while. Don't try to do it all in a day. Don't try to do it all in a week. Just, you know, print out a list or, you know, have it in some sort of spreadsheet and just start ticking it off. And you'd be amazed. Actually, it's a good exercise to go through because you might have a ton of accounts on things that you just don't need an account for anymore. The fewer accounts you can have out there, the more you reduce all these attack vectors on your personal information, on your identity. And also, look at switching one using one app. For instance, if you're for a mobile device and on your desktop, I would suggest Signal. Signal is a great starting place. There are other apps that I'll talk about in other episodes that kind of take that to the next level. Threema, Session. These are other apps that are focused on privacy and security. Security in the sense where you don't even have to use your phone number. You just basically get an account ID. But it's an easier ask to start on Signal, and you'd be amazed if you're not on Signal yet. If you sign up, you'll probably have quite a few friends and family that are already on there that will message you. If you're on Android, you can also set it as your default SMS app. Highly recommend doing that. And an easy way to tell people, especially if we're coming up on the holidays, we're, you know, at least in America with Thanksgiving and for everybody Christmas, we're going to be around friends and family. Promote privacy. You know, you don't have to be a freak about it, but you can just say, hey, you know, it'd be really cool if we all got on Signal, because first of all, it's platform independent and we can communicate end-to-end encrypted, which means no one can see what we're saying or what photos we're sharing with each other. If you are wanting to have super secret private conversations, you can even set disappearing messages to, you know, like, hey, 30 seconds burn after reading or 5 minutes or whatever interval you want to set. So why would you use that? Well, let's say you're going to send a password to your partner, your spouse, your partner, whatever, to log into your bank. And they're like, hey, I'm trying to log into the bank, or I need to make the mortgage payment. What's the login? If you send that to them on Signal, you can set that message to be disappearing after 30 seconds, after they open it, or 1 minute or 2 minutes after they open it. So that way they see it, they have enough time to copy it and put it into the login, and then it vaporizes. They don't have to remember to delete it. But that information is being shared over an end-to-end encrypted connection, which means only the party that sent it and the party that's receiving it can see it. Signal can't see it. No one in between can see it. Text messages are not end-to-end encrypted. Those can be seen, stored, and accessed, you know, through request by law enforcement or third parties with a subpoena, to my knowledge. Although, you know, who really knows, right? That's the thing. You don't know who can access it. Maybe someone who works there can access it. We don't know, but they're not encrypted. So if you send that password over SMS text, boom, it's on their server for who knows how long, maybe forever. Same with iMessage. For people that are like, well, iMessage isn't encrypted. I don't think it's encrypted. I think it's encrypted, but Apple holds the keys, those encryption keys, because they're on their servers. So though iMessage is more secure, definitely, than using SMS, it's still vulnerable. And so the more you can get people over to using something like Signal, the better off you're going to be. The cool thing is, you know, you have a lot of functionality that you have in iMessage inside of Signal. You want to send a funny animated GIF, or you want to do phone calls, you can do voice calls and video chat. It's great. And the quality of the audio is much better on the phone call than I've experienced just regular cell phone calls. So it has a lot of benefits and it's an easy win. So as you're learning more about privacy and you're listening to different podcasts, you're watching videos, you're reading blog articles, start to become an advocate yourself. Share that knowledge that you're learning with the people that matter to you, especially the people that you're communicating with, because that's how you actually start to get that, like, desire, that fire to just be like, all right, what else can I axe out of my life? And it kind of becomes a lifestyle change in a way, and it should be, because you're being cognizant of what you're doing, you're understanding how your data is being collected and used, and when you're signing up for things. I've used the example in the past, you know, the grocery store membership card. Give them all bogus data. They don't care. That cash register, that cashier does not care. They're just trying to get you to sign up. But if you don't sign up, you don't get the reduced prices on the products. So, you know, it's nice to save money, but you don't have to give that crap out. So feed everyone bad data, I say, but just make sure you're in control of it. Make sure you can always get that password reset link or whatever the case may be. You want to be able to be notified and get that information. You just don't want to give them your real info. I want to also promote donating to open source projects, because that's how most of all of them are funded. A lot of people give a lot of time. They have servers running for development. They cost money. Yeah, donations are not going to equal like a salary or anything like that for a lot of these independent kind of projects, smaller projects that are self-funded, but a lot of them are nonprofit. And just so I've been trying to make a point for myself to, like, what project am I going to donate to this month? And it can be any amount of money, $5, $10, $50. Again, talking about No Agenda Podcast earlier, they're a completely donated, supported podcast. They refer to their people who donate to their show as producers, because producers fund the project and they give producer credits. And that's really awesome. And so that's kind of, I've tried to make that part of my ethos as much as possible. If I like something, if I use it, if I find value, how can I support it? It doesn't always have to be financially. Maybe you support it by sharing it with friends and family, or, you know, if you're a developer, you can contribute via doing code or graphics. You know, maybe you're a technical writer, you can do technical documentation for that website, for their project website. There's a myriad of different ways you can contribute, but the easiest is through financial means. So like I this month donated to Signal. By the way, it's tax deductible. They email you, which at least in the US, they email you an email that you can print out, throw it in your tax folder for when you do your taxes, and boom, you get a tax deduction. I also became a sustainer member with Calyx OS. They actually have the Calyx Institute, which is an basically Calyx. How am I trying to say this? They create the operating system that we run on the de-Googled Android phones as well, but they also do other initiatives. So I was looking for this started because I actually was looking for a replacement for one of my hotspots, and through becoming a sustainer through the Calyx Institute membership, because you become a member, I'm able to replace it. They offer unlimited Wi-Fi hotspot, 5G LTE on a MiFi. And it was $750, I think, for the whole year, but $236 of that is tax deductible. And that pays for the entire year. It includes my membership. I'm supporting a nonprofit that is focused on privacy. I'm using their operating system on my phone. So I'm not saying you should go do that. It's just something that I've decided to do, is that if I'm going to buy something or pay for something, let me see if there's a company that supports what I'm looking for, which is not selling my data, providing value for the value that I'm giving to them. I'm not telling you you have to go pay for all these things or do all these things. I'm just saying, just try to work that into your thought process. Like, okay, maybe I should, you know, I've been using Signal for 6 months. Maybe I could throw them $20. Hey, it's tax deductible and awesome. I'm paying for privacy. That's the way to look at it. Privacy is not free. The services that are free are going to sell all your information. That's the way to look at it. So hopefully I didn't drone on too long. It's coming up on 53 minutes here. The initial, I don't think I even mentioned this, the very beginning of the episode was, I think 2014. Was it 2014? I do believe it was a TED Talk by Glenn Greenwald talking about why privacy matters. It's a 20-minute TED Talk. It was just the first 5.5 minutes. It really sticks with me. Those don't know, Glenn Greenwald was the journalist at the time, I think working for The Guardian, that helped with the Snowden information that was coming out, posting it online, getting it into the news cycles there as all that information was coming out. It's important to understand that all these tech companies are for profit models, and if the services are free, the profit's got to come from somewhere. Advertising, selling our stuff. So the more we can get away from supporting those companies and supporting the ones that do care about privacy and being decent. I'm not saying every single one is perfect. Some of them do, you know, have some question marks from time to time, different projects, but overall trying to move away from the Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Yahoo, whatever, and two other companies, and kind of being diversified, not having all your eggs in one basket, is only going to help you in the long run. So having said all that, I hope this made some kind of sense and provided some value to you. I will be trying to get one more podcast out before or by the end of Thanksgiving, which is coming up next week here in about 6 days. I'm thinking I'm going to do it on probably mobile device, maybe Calyx OS and maybe Graphene. I'm not really sure. That's probably what I'm leaning towards, but I reserve the right to change that if I want to. So thanks again for listening. Feel free to pop over to the website, leave a review, leave a donation if you like. If you're into the podcasting 2.0 apps, you can blast some sats to me at any point in time. I will get into how those work in another episode. I know I talk about a lot of things, and if you don't understand it, that's okay. If I'm talking way beyond where you're at, don't sweat it. We'll get there. We'll get everybody there. Also, feel free to shoot me an email, follow me on Twitter, and engage with me. If you have any questions, I'll try to do my best to answer them. And until next time, I will catch you guys on episode 6. Later. Take my place. I went too hard, can't feel my face.